Red Cow Arcade.
Well, it's been a while since we podcasted because we went a little bit early before Christmas last time. So it's been more like 2.5 weeks since we've done this.
Oh, yeah. I feel more well-rested now.
Yeah.
I hopefully won't be slurring my words as much this time.
Yeah. Are you getting tired of the, hey, is that guy high? Hey, is that guy drunk stuff?
Yeah. It's just, this is what my face looks like. This is how I talk.
Well, that's and my when, face, sir.
Yeah. And then after the, you know, I think that, especially that week, you know, we went like after 10 and then I just melt down. I'm just a pile of flesh.
It is funny. It's like, the podcast is probably one of the easiest things that we do, not just creatively, but in general. And yet it, even it eats into what would might otherwise be sleep time or what, you know, there, and for me, there's a whole, upload prep process that comes after, you know, it's about an hour and 15 minutes of stuff that has to be done.
Yeah.
And so if I want to do it the night we record, we tend to record Friday nights. If I want to do it that same night, then it means a late night. And but I like to try because, you know, then you can leave it uploading while you go to sleep. And
true,
you
know. It is.
But
true.
Hey, it doesn't. And then with the clips, there's like you got to farm the whole thing for clips. So, you know, hey, it's not ballet, this YouTube stuff.
No, I was just playing Super Mario 3D World with my kid before I put him to bed, but we got to Champions Road. Have you played Champions Road in Super Mario 3D World?
Is that when you go to Rosalina and...
Yeah, there's after you beat the game, like after you beat Bowser, there's like three more worlds. It's pretty generous.
I thought it was only one.
There's World Star, World Mushroom, World Flower, and then there's four, I guess. World Crown is the one you... It's like super secret. You have to get all the stars, all the flags...
Oh, wow.
All the golden flagpoles and all the stamps.
All the golden flagpoles as each character.
No, that's something else. But oh, okay. you just have to get all the golden flagpoles. And you get to World Crown. And there's this level called Champions Road, which is so hard. We've played it two nights in a row and I haven't beat it yet. It's like such a leap, because even those secret levels before that, I'm like, oh, I can still beat this. I'm pretty good. And then the jump in difficulty is so high. It's
oh, man,
nuts.
That reminds me of Gloria's been so into like the princess being captured. She loves, like, she's very scandalized by like what, and what fed into it was she saw the cutscenes from Mario Odyssey where there's a little bit more story behind it where he wants to marry her. And she's like, oh, he wants to marry her. Why? Why would he want to? And then when you beat Bowser in Odyssey, Bowser and Mario try to offer her bouquets and she rejects them both and goes on vacation. And Gloria's like, what? Why is she say no to both of them? And like she wanted to know a lot more about that. But so for about a week there, every video game that we had to play had to involve like more story with Princess Peach. And so she's like, in Mario Sunshine, does she get stolen? And I was like, yeah, later she does. But like, she starts off on a vacation for a while. And she's like, okay, let's get to the part where she gets captured. And we watched the cutscene on YouTube. But then she was like, can you try to play the game until you get to that part? And I was like, I can try with this fucking Sunshine game. Which, like, the more I play that game, the more I'm like, it's
janky.
It's like glitched out. And yeah. So I had always heard that those platformer levels, you know, the ones that are like, I always heard that those were really bad. It was like, I was on one of the earliest, easiest ones. And I was sweating balls and trying to get through it. And yeah, I think I'm like officially like very much not a fan of Sunshine. I think that game kind of sucks.
Yeah. Super Mario 3D World is really great. But it's this Champions Road, the like last secret world is so bullshit. And like, it's so funny because like Gabriel he's been like used to me just like schooling every level. He's like, how come you're dying? What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like, he's like, why'd you do that on purpose? I'm like, I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't fall on purpose.
She asks me that too. She's like, why'd you do it? I'm like, it was an accident. I don't know. So did he get any Mario 3D World Christmas stuff?
Oh yeah,
or birthday?
He got Well, we put little figurines in his advent calendar every day. So he's got like all the Mario characters. He's got a Bowser castle. His auntie's got him like Mario jammies and because once somebody knows like a mascot that your kid's into, they'll get you tons of
it. It's like the YouTube algorithm in real life. They'll recommend the hell out of the one thing.
And so yeah, he got jammies, he got socks, he got everything. He's all set. He's got every Mario thing ever.
I got a fair amount of Mario stuff myself. I was given some like those little Mario Hot Wheels toys, and I got a couple of Mario plushies. I think the idea was like Gloria's got a bunch anyway, so if these are like dad's gifts, they can kind of like a couple of the things that she had requested were she wanted a Koopa. She kept saying and a Koopa. And I ended up
Koopa Troopa or
well, she watches enough of the old cartoon to not Bowser is not his first name. So
King
she'll say
Koopa.
King Koopa or Koopa.
And which actually, I think he's known in Japan as Koopa.
Yeah,
he's not known as Bowser. When they brought stuff over to America, they did all sorts of weird stuff.
Well, yeah, and one of those things was in the Super Mario Brothers 3 show. The kids had different names. They had like, it's like Bully Koopa and like Big Mouth Koopa and Hip and Hop. And so it's not a bunch of like musician names like Wendy O Koopa and Ludwig and Iggy. Which is what it is in the video games. So she knows the girl Koopaling as Cootie Pie, not as Wendy. And so she had requested a Cootie Pie, plushie, and she got it. And so we had a lot of fun with that. The Bowser is a puppet. Newberry Comics had a puppet Bowser.
Wow.
And so she's been loving the hell out of our whole living room becomes this, you know, this site where Koopa and Cootie Pie have a power struggle.
Nice.
It's a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah, he got some like tree houses with like little like critters like koalas and things. So there's like a Bowser castle next to this treehouse full of like woodland animals. So it's just like it's chaos.
Chaos. She got her favorite gift was this. I think it was one of the hot toys this year, but I had not heard of it. Was Present Pets, and it's, you know, it's like colorful robot dogs. Mostly, I don't know if it's anything besides dogs. Like if there are kittens or something, but the main gimmick is that when you pet it, it'll do different things. So if you pet it on the head, it does something. If you pet it on the tummy, it does something. But more than that, it unboxes itself. And it was a pretty remarkable thing.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, pull this tab.
Does it like get a box cutter and starts?
No, it was freaky. It was.
It starts flashing through a box.
Because suddenly you're like, there's something alive in there. It's got these pre-perforated, you know, lines all over it. And then you start to hear like the music come to life and it starts to like rip through and punch through its own box. And eventually like the box flies open and like the dog is there. I got most of it on video. But, you know, of course, it's kind of a one-time thing because the life of the toy after that has nothing to do with the box. You don't keep the box. But I guess it would incentivize future purchases. Like, you get to have that big unboxing moment. You pay $30 for that unboxing. And now she seems to have COVID, it seems.
Really?
We don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I'm sure everybody all around the country has this problem, but like Boston right now is like 18% of people being tested have COVID, have Omicron or something. You know, the case rate's through the roof. And she's been going to school, you know, at some points there were mask requirements and whatever, but she returned to school June 2020. So she's been around other kids and teachers for a really long time through this whole thing. And this is the first time that it was like one of the kids tested positive and we got to close the school and everybody goes home and everybody has to test and blah, blah, blah. So neither Nina or I have symptoms, but we're also pretty vaxxed and or as vaxxed as you can be. But Gloria's not. She's under 5. And so we went to go get tested yesterday. They had like a long drive-through line. It was, I thought, like, drive-through, this should be pretty quick, even if it's crowded. Nah, man, it was like 10 minutes a car. And it's like 17 cars. So like you're there for like 2 hours, you know, waiting for, and it's all like, it's all handwritten registration and stuff. Like, I was like, how am I supposed to get the results of this? And they were, and they were like, we'll email that, whatever email you just wrote. Like, so it's all,
make
just
sure
like,
your handwriting's good.
Yeah. I was like, shit, dude, are you going to be able to read my handwriting? So I, by the way, it's been almost 48 hours. And I still haven't seen results. So that's why I don't know if she's got it or not, but nobody had symptoms. Everything was cool. And then last night she woke up at like 4 with like aches and pains and kind of like, you have kids, you know, like when they start to kind of cry uncomfortably and you're like, oh, I think they might be sick. And she seemed to have a fever. So she was home with me all day today and yesterday. And she it's something hit her in the middle of the day too. So I guess we'll see. But whatever it is, it's the day one is very mild and neither of us have it. So it's mostly the inconvenience, because if she tests positive, she can't go back for 10 days still, even though the isolation is 5 days.
They go back and forth on it, don't they?
This is whatever way the wind's blowing. But she, supposedly you're immune for 90 days or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Making shit up.
I'm not going to give any medical advice from now on.
Yeah. I mean, since the inception of this podcast, COVID has been with us.
Yeah.
We had like a couple of weeks where it wasn't. And then it.
And then we're like, it's fake.
Is this another swine flu? But we, while we were off, because we had a week off together, she and I, we went to Dave & Buster's, and that was really fun because Hungry Hungry Hippos, as seen in the Black Friday episode, was one of her major presents. And let me tell you, Hungry Hungry Hippos still works on kids.
I loved it. You could smash it, get some marbles.
There's something kind of mechanically satisfying about the way they designed that game. Like, it's like it works very nicely. It's very fun. It's got like the tactility of it is like right where it needs to be. And so Dave & Buster's has gigantic Hungry Hungry Hippos, like the ones you can like ride on.
That's awesome.
So she was like, let's go there. And she's got this thing, man, she's a girl. She's weird. She's like, let's take pictures of the giant ones and we'll show the small ones what it looks like we'll connect the dots for the small ones. So we went there. And then we also, we saw it twice. We saw Sing 2, the new Illumination. That's how the minions say it. Illumination!
I wonder if they'll say that before the Mario one. Or maybe Mario will say it.
Or maybe they'll get Charles Martinet to do it, and that's the cameo.
Yeah. Or Chris Pratt as Charles Martinet does.
Illumination! Wahoo! I thought Sing 2 was very good. We had watched Sing 1 a lot of times, and it's pretty good. Think about some of these CG animated family films, the ones that are pretty good, is that I think, like, you know, by the time you've storyboarded it and you get the actors in and you've animated it, you've written it, like, you know, hopefully your core concept was good, because there's no rerouting an animated film, you know? You have to just make the movie you planned to make. And I think what happens with some of them, like Frozen being an example, or Wreck-It Ralph, or whatever, like they kind of determine like the value of the thing after it got made. They're like, how do people respond to it? Or what could we have done more? Or, you know, what, like, cause they can't really respond to their own creative discoveries during the process. So in some cases, I think Trolls is a good example. I'm very well versed in this kid shit. Frozen 2, I some people didn't like Frozen 2. I thought like it really expanded on the concept and
the lore of Frozen.
There's been a number of these sequels, the Addams Family 2, where it feels like the creative team is like, oh, okay, we could have done more. There's like more opportunities here. And then they make a much better sequel. So anyway, Sing 2 is quite good. And I think what makes it unique is that even though it's an animated film starring animals, the conceit of the first one and the second one is that there's a big show in the third act. The whole thing leads up to a big show. And the show is every bit as kind of like designed for live performance as a live show would be. So they actually like brought in like costume designers for the movie, like, and they designed costumes for the elephant and for, you know, whatever. And the musical performances are very good. Aaron Egerton from, you know, the Kingsman movies and stuff. He plays a gorilla. Oh, it's pretty good. Right. Matthew McConaughey plays a koala in both movies. And it led me actually down a rabbit hole of Matthew McConaughey YouTube videos where he wrote a book recently. It's like kind of a self-help book. And Matthew McConaughey is like a really smart dude, man. Like,
yeah,
I've like
listened to some interviews and it's like sometimes he's like he can be like saying stony baloney, but then he'll like draw you back in. I mean, he's just so charming, though. Yeah. You just can't help but listen to him. But yeah, he's got a lot of good thoughts in him.
I think he's very high IQ one way or another. Yeah. And I keep like waiting for like the other shoe to drop where he's like, well, once I got through my big divorce with my wife or my alcoholism or something. But no, I don't think he has anything like that in his past. Like, because he'll beat himself up for, he's like, when I pray, I sometimes don't let myself off the hook. I say, you're a repeat offender, McConaughey, or whatever. I like him.
Like a good dude.
I think he's, yeah, I feel like we're lucky to have such a weird celebrity. And I mean, cause he's a very, very famous person. Like, he's a A-list actor still. He talks a lot about, how he turned down the rom-com generation of his career. Like, he was doing really well with rom-coms and they turned away from him. And he tells this story about how, like, he was basically offered, like, I think the final offer is $12 million to do another rom-com. And he was like getting energy from saying no, like it was becoming fun to like, to reject.
I wonder if like he single-handedly killed that genre, because like there hasn't been like a lot of good ones since he stopped. I mean, there's been few, but like he
said, it was like, it's fun to make them. He's like, you make a ton of money and you get to go to some cool location and, you know, and everybody loves them. And he's like, you know, it's fun, but it's, I wanted to do something else. And he said, I'll tell you what though. He's like, by the time they got to like $8 million for the offer, I saw that script very differently. It suddenly, I was seeing all the creative opportunities in that movie.
And then he did True Detective, which is like a transcendent role for him. So,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's in Interstellar and Dallas Buyers Club, and he's been in all kinds of cool stuff in the interim. But no, I when he was doing it, so we were watching some behind the scenes stuff. I like to show her the actors doing the voices, and he did basically no press for Sing 2. but there's like one clip where he goes like, we need good news. All we get is bad news. We need good news. We need a fairy tale to live. We need a fairy tale to believe in. That's all he said. This is like a kind of veiled political statement. I'm with him, man. We need some good news. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just his positivity that you always need some sort of positivity. And
yeah, exactly.
I agree with that. The world can be so cynical.
Right. On the topic of like prayer and positivity. Yeah. So we went to that Swansea Mall church.
You did?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was great.
Like for Christmas? Is that where you went?
Yeah, we went Christmas Eve. So the church is His Providence Church, and it's got, I don't know, it's what I thought a mega church kind of, well, no, not really. A mega church isn't like a stadium or like a, you know, this is like, you know, a big open space with lots and lots of chairs, a lot of unmasked people and, you know, crowded all together during an Omicron breakout.
God bless.
but we were some of them, and it was mostly musical. It's like a band, basically, like a keyboardist, a couple of acoustic guitarists, and they play essentially Christian soft rock, but like really good Christian soft rock. and they've got big projectors, you know, that show the lyrics and stuff, and they stream it to Facebook and to YouTube, and the streams are very high quality. Like, whoever's doing the technology on this thing, you know, is really bought in. And then they have this guy with long blonde hair who's like their young pastor Zach, and Pastor Zach much like Matthew McConaughey, was full of good ideas and good philosophy and sound philosophy. Very charismatic, like you would have to be at this point, I think. And he's got a podcast with his wife where they talk about their faith and how it fits into culture and politics and their day-to-day lives. And I listened to a little bit of it. There's a lot of, I think, politically, philosophically sound stuff in there. So it's weird for me. I'm like engaging a lot with this like Christian content when I've not been a believer for a very long time, but there's certainly a lot of benefit to it. And I don't know.
This just makes me really excited for the new season of Righteous Gemstones.
Totally. I'm excited too.
That's like what I think this is weekend maybe.
Even though it's obviously a fairly large scale operation, I'm not seeing where the money. Somebody must be bankrolling it, I suppose. It's definitely not like super well attended. It was on Christmas Eve. It was crazy. I mean, it was hundreds and hundreds of people, which was really cool, by the way. Because when I was a kid, every Christmas Eve we would go to my mom's church, and I remember as a kid it was just packed. It was standing room only, wicked Christmassy. Everybody was there. Yeah, everybody made sure to go. And then as the years went by, it became kind of just hangers on and eventually very, very few people. I mean, almost nobody.
Yeah. It usually it's just the like elderly and nearly dead.
Yeah. Or like people who are kind of connected like through civic responsibility or whatever. And so it was really cool to go to a place on Christmas Eve that was like the Christmassiest thing ever. And I found out the pastor Zach is a, he's a jazz musician from North Carolina, and now he's up here at the Swansea Mall.
All right.
But his
far out.
I'll tell you what, man, his podcast is really good. Like, in other words, he produces a good podcast. I don't know who does it for him, but he's a good personality. His wife is a good personality. They come up with good topics. They have good metadata. They upload it to everywhere that you could make it available. Like do you guys pay money to like have people help? Like, I see it and I'm, normally I would be like, I could spruce up that operation. You know, I look at James Rolfe and I'm like, I could spruce up that operation. I look at his Providence Church. I'm like, I don't think I have anything to add. I think you guys got this.
Yeah. I mean, I think like local Catholic church here doesn't even have a website. It's just like,
this thing's crazy.
It's there's no technology in that.
So I've been watching they have a Tuesday night prayer stream, and I've been watching that on the elliptical, and it's people local to me who are struggling with addiction or whatever, going up and talking about their story, and Pastor Zach plays like dramatic music on the keyboard while they talk. I don't know. It feels like it's, I guess going back to traditional, it's not traditionally presented, but going back to like religion, going back to something that's like, we're going to try to lift each other up. We're going to, we're going to invite somebody who's struggling with addiction to come up and tell their story. Like it feels like what's missing from the culture antithesis of social media or something, even though it's broadcasted on social media.
Yeah. I go on social media. You watch people yell at each other.
Yeah.
Insult each other and bring each other down.
Yeah, he did a sermon on everything you proclaim should like set people free. Like you should be setting people free and not holding people captive. And when you're accusatory, which like, and people like rush to accusation. And, of course he has theological citations for this. When you rush to accusation, like you're keeping people captive. And so there's a lot of good philosophy and I like that kind of thing. So, I'll be pretty religious pretty soon, I think.
Yeah. You're going to come in, you'll have like the robe and shawl. Yeah. You'll open the podcast with a prayer.
I'll be disgustingly positive. Nobody will want to hear from me. Gloria asks about God a lot. And, I don't like really know. I'm like kind of out of knowing what to say about it. Like, but her recent thing is she's like, I wish I was a God so that I wouldn't die. She doesn't like it. She's very not wanting to die. I'm like, well, if you believe in God, Gloria, then you don't die. You just go elsewhere. And she's like, what? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
So that was my church experience. Did you go on Christmas Eve?
No, we were too scared of COVID, I guess.
we went right out there like it was a flyover state. Like it was the South.
It's very interesting.
But we didn't get it from them anyway. We got it from Gloria's school. But
those disgusting children.
You released your walk video. You walked the walk.
Yeah, I walked the walk. That was fun. It was very fun to get back into like just a cooking video, and our friend Drunken Monk sent it, and it was good. It was good to get outside my comfort zone. It was good to try something all new.
It looked yummy.
It was delicious.
Yeah,
and I think I'll probably do it again with like chicken, because like ribs are kind of like just having to chop the ribs every time. It's a little unwieldy, but yeah. Just cut up some like boneless chicken thighs and do the same recipe. I think that would be really good because the flavors are perfect. Oh my god, it was so good.
I want it. I want.
And so now I'm trying to figure out what my next video is going to be. I got a couple things in the works. I got the analog pocket thing. I think I got scope creep with that one. So I'm gonna.
Oh, where it's like. Where do you stop talking about it, kind of?
Yeah, it's I kind of want to keep talking about like handhelds and like what my relationship to them is and like my history with them, and you know, talk about, I don't know, how I got my first Game Boy, and like, I don't know, like I said, scope creep. It's like I don't just want to make a meme video about Shrek, which I still will. It'll still be a part of that video, but I think I'm going to make it a bait and switch where I talk about, I like make it a jumping point off of other things.
I mean, as a fan of EJ videos, I would love I would never be like, oh, you should limit it. Like, I would watch the whole, you know, everything that you,
just every tangent go on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cause I'm a lot more interested in that than I am a review of the device, obviously.
And it seems like there's a appreciation for it, because people liked both the Donkey Kong and the Super Nintendo video, and
right,
and those were, you know, those were a lot of work. But I think
the question is, could you kind of could you like put that video in the fire and kind of work it slowly across the next few months while you also produce like smaller effort videos or something? You know, is there a way to do that?
Yeah, I was thinking about, because I there's a couple of recipes I want to do. I want to do sauerkraut. I want to make sauerkraut, which I can. That's fermentation, so that'll take a while. And then, I want to do a recipe with that sauerkraut. I also want to just do another simple cooking video, which doesn't involve reviewing a product, where I make a recipe that I'm thinking about concocting. So yeah, there's a few like simple like recipe ideas I have, and so I might do those concurrently. I think I work on several things at once usually. This is what I what happens to catch my attention and catch the motivation and all that stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm working on. I've been talking about making my own arcade one-up overview for a long time, and so it's been written for a year, and Arcade 1-Up has evolved a lot in that year. So I'm actually glad that I didn't jump on it, because the video would already be a relic. Like, it would already be like, yeah, but what about?
Because they have the Arcade 1-Up Pros now or whatever, right? Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think it will be a really good, I may call it something like, my introduction to home arcades or something like that, so, you know, something like, it's a good, like, for like, if you want to watch a 17 minute video, they give you like a good overview of how to think about this market space. This is a good video to do it.
Yeah.
So I recorded the VO over the break, and then I've started to edit it. I haven't shot any footage because so much of it is just me. It's kind of like an essay talking about the market space. We're talking about things that I considered when buying, and why I made a decision or not. So it's screenshots of websites, and And so the supporting visuals necessarily are B-roll of arcades I don't have. So it's like the job has become, I didn't expect this. It's become like scouring YouTube for other people's B-roll.
Yeah.
To support what I'm saying. And for anybody who thinks, you know, I've actually, on like Cinemassacre Truth and stuff, I've seen people like give Cinemassacre shit for like, well, all they did was like record VO and set it to like, you know, just commercial footage or something. And it's like, well, actually, I'm finding that that's much more difficult than shooting my own thing, planning my own thing out. And that, you know, because it means you have to download the whole, you know, and downloading like a 1080p, you have to always, like, downloading from YouTube is always using like janky tools to do it. And so then, but then you actually
like
have
putting like, yeah, it's putting viruses on your computer.
While yeah. And you have to like scan for like, well, okay, like, do I have a shot here that will actually work? And then I'm often dissatisfied with the way it lines up. There are YouTubers for sure that they turn on a mic. They're like, I'm going to tell you about my PSP collection or something. And they turn on a mic and they talk extemporaneously about their PSP collection. And then they show you like very long shots of their PSP collection. It's not like well-timed, well-written. And so this is like, I'm changing the B-roll. I'm showing you every beat of my narration. Mm. So it's, you know, it's a tight video and you know, like everything I make, it's not, I'm not going to like point a camera at something and blab.
Yeah.
I remember there's the YouTuber, Cool Duder, Sean T. Phillips. He was one of the, you know, a bigger YouTuber that pointed people towards Boxmac initially. And he actually, he's who I got the idea to do Black Friday videos from. Cause I was like, oh, that's really fun. Like he goes out and like shows us what he did on Black Friday. But all he does, man, is like, it's him with the phone walking through the hallway of Walmart with no cuts, talking behind the camera. And then like, when he's like done with that segment, it cross dissolves to another segment, just like it. Like that's it. And yeah. So I could do that or I could do stuff like that. But, I refuse for some reason.
No,
I like my
can't
videos.
Half-ass it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, if I'm going to half-ass something, it's going to be like a podcast, you know, something like,
yeah,
that's low effort like this.
Ring light and yeah. Mics and
yeah. It ends
professional
up
software.
Yeah. I always want to put stuff out that's content. But anyway, I suspect that will be out. It will very probably be out next Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So. It's going to be good. It's going to be really, really fun for people who I suspect that, you know, it'll never find an audience because that's just how the shit goes. It's unless we're shit talking James Rolfe, it's not going to find an audience. But if I had ever seen and ogled a home arcade before, but I was like, but I didn't quite know what the story with it was, this would be a great video for me to watch. Like I would walk away from the video having like a plan.
I got a CRT too. My parents had an extra one and I was like, I wanted to, I got the light gun bug. I think we both probably got the idea from the gaming historian to get into light guns.
Yeah. I had an NES rotting down here and two perfectly functional light guns. And I was like, why don't I show, I have a CRT. Why don't I show Gloria Duck Hunt? Maybe she'll like it.
Yeah, so I got the bug from you too, and so I tracked one down, hooked up my NES, and man, it's fun. I did a stream, so that's you can if you go on my twitch.tv EJ Massa/EJ Massa. I did a stream there, and I uploaded it to my new channel, which is EJ Streams on YouTube. So if you please subscribe to that. Because I'll be uploading all of my stream archives there. I mean, some of them are better than others. The Duck Hunt one, I think, was a banger. I recommend that. I'm uploading my Final Fantasy V one, which is not as good. So there's a lot of dead air. So that's scraping the bottom of the barrel of the Red Cow content. If you want,
we had decent. a bunch of us from Discord were in your chat, and so we got to keep the conversation alive and kept it fun.
Yeah, because like. yeah, in the Final Fantasy V one, it was just like one or two people, and sometimes nobody. So I'm talking to myself mostly. But in this one, it was like a hangout on a Friday night. It was really fun.
Yeah, and Discord is a good way to source for participation.
And I just pointed a camera at my CRT to stream it.
I was so surprised by, first of all, like the satisfaction of firing that gun is still there for me.
Yeah.
And two, like the technology, that infrared white light thing is really kind of sophisticated. It's like, it works super well. I rarely felt like, oh, come on. Like I had to have shot him.
Yeah. Like if you miss, it feels like you missed.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no sensor bar at the top of the TV or like, oh no, you got to put it below the TV or there's nothing like that. It's like you're firing at a TV. All you need is a
cursor on the screen. Yeah.
No cursor, no sight. Yeah. Super awesome. And so that inspired me to having seen the Gaming Historian video and being like, wow, there's a lot of light gun games. I bought 10 light gun games for the NES. And as soon as I did, Drunken Monk was like, how come you didn't just buy an EverDrive? Because he's like, how much did that cost you? I'm like, $150. He's like, that's the cost of an EverDrive. You could just have every game on your NES. Which I was like, you are totally right. But now I'll just have a lot more NES games.
I think that's more fun. You got a bunch of relics. I do have an EverDrive, so I'm not going to do that. But
now I have to clean my NES because it's every time I want to change a game. If once I get the context just so, the game works fine forever. But whenever I want to change out a game, I got to find the clitoris and stuff.
I bought a new the pins. You can buy the pins on eBay or Amazon, and I bought that. It's actually, it's kind of hard to disassemble an NES, but once you do, it's easy to get that pin structure out because it just slides off, and then you slide the new one back in. It's pretty. I would recommend it because I
it
did
was
that.
Enough to make me think, should I get an analog mini NES thing? And I looked into it, and they're only aftermarket.
Just get the contacts. Your NES still works. Just get the contacts replaced. Yeah, you'll be
that's
fine.
Right. But I didn't play too many of them yet. But I've played Into the Earth, I think is what it was called. And it was like a 3D space shooter. It was pretty good. It's pretty fun. Very arcadey. They're all arcadey, you know. And then the one that I spent a lot of time on that I was like, this is so much more fun than Duck Hunt. Why is it that Duck Hunt is the only game anybody knows for the light gun? Like, how come
it's the Wii Sports effect. Like, you know, some people just bought a Wii and only had Wii Sports. I remember growing up, there was like your like uncle would buy an NES and all he would have is Duck Hunt or the dual cart with Mario Duck Hunt. And that's the only game he had because that's all he wanted and that's all he played.
It makes sense, but it's just like everybody had a zapper. And everybody had, you know, with exceptions like that, everybody had a few games. And it's just strange that nobody ever shopped for, like, really. Like, and even in retro gaming YouTube, I haven't heard a lot of talk about, like, oh, grab these cool light gun games. They're really fun. But the one that I played a lot of was Sunsoft's Freedom Force.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a rail. So it scrolls left to right. Bad guys pop out of doors. You got to shoot them before they shoot you. You have ammo. There's power-ups that you can shoot at to get power-ups or to get health. Or if you, some of them are bad, you don't want to shoot them. And then there's hostages. You can't shoot the hostages. So all the makings of a nice complex zapper game, and it gets increasingly hard until you die. And you will, you know, but it also didn't feel, again, because the zapper technology feels fair to me. It's not like the power glove or something. It makes me want to get good at it. And I just love it. I was like, this is great. I can't believe I want more like infrared based light gun games.
I wish they had infinity of them. Yeah. I played Freedom Force too from your recommendation. And it is really fun. Like, it's surprising how sophisticated it is. Right. Especially because, my memory of NES was basically just Duck Hunt. And I think people were so enamored with, like, the NES controller at the time that I think going beyond the going to the zapper was just seemed like too much or something.
We got what was it called? The action set where you get the Olympic pad and the zapper and it was a three-game cart. And I actually didn't even know that there was a cart for a long time when I was a kid. I didn't know there was a cart that was just Duck Hunt and Mario. I thought everybody had the 3-in-1.
Yeah, I had the 2-in-1. I have a bunch of them because every eBay, you get anything on eBay, it comes with like a Duck Hunt Mario. And I have I think I have 3 zappers, maybe 2. I don't know. I have a lot of sometimes the auctions would come with that. As soon as you buy, like, because I want one game, and like to buy all 3 of the things, I was like, oh, that's the price of one game, so I'll just get that.
And Duck Hunt's the second highest for that reason, is the second highest selling NES game after Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, so everybody, that means everybody has a zapper, and they never bought more zapper games. It's just a little strange, but maybe it speaks to the fact that like there were, you know, to get the most bang for your buck, maybe you didn't want to get a zapper gun game because they're just kind of pick up and play. They're kind of mini games, you know, you know, you get a lot less than you do with Mario 3, let's say.
You were talking shit about the sensor bar, but I remember we had a kind of a resurgence of shooter games, which was kind of fun. I had House of the Dead Overkill, and
maybe I'll play that.
Dead Space. What was it? Dead Space. There was a Dead Space game that was basically an on-rail shooter, and it was really fun. And it was kind of like a resurgence of Duck Hunt style thing.
And you can literally buy Duck Hunt on the Wii U Virtual Console with the Wii. Yeah, but then you have a site.
You have a site. It's kind of all the games do have a site. But I remember playing a lot of House of Dead Overkill with my friend, and we were just like, have pizza in one hand and the Wii remote in the other hand.
Are you shooting with the Wiimote, or does it come with some kind of
just shoot with a Wiimote. I mean, you could get like some sort of gun. They have a ton of gun peripherals now. A lot of people make arcade one-ups that have the Wii in it because there's so many good light gun shooters for the Wii.
I've been playing a little bit more of my Wii lately. I forgot that I have a homebrew cracked Wii that has a hard drive on it filled with Wii games, and I can add more easily.
Yeah. House of the Dead 1, 2, and 3. Get House of the Dead Overkill. Get Dead Space, whatever it's called. Get it's like got one of those like Dead Space Overkill, or, you know, it's got one of those. And then what's the other one? There's a Resident Evil Raccoon City Cops or something. I don't know.
It's funny all the generations of games, and the, like when we talked about our favorite consoles and like what generation of games means the most to you and stuff. There was a guy who named Chris who commented on our favorite consoles clip today, and so he said the PS2 is what he would have to pick for his favorite console, and that Silent Hill 2 and 3 are some of the games. So you mentioned that you're a Silent Hill fan. But then he goes on to mention a lot of games I recognize, but I'm like, I have not played nor would I play any of these. They're just like so outside of my world. It's like hearing about food that I've never eaten before. I'm like, I have no idea. He's like, oh yeah, PS2, Silent Hill 2 and 3. Like, I already don't know what that is. Devil May Cry 1 and 3, Resident Evil 4, Hitman Trilogy, The Suffering Duology, Final Fantasy 10, Wild Arms 3, Jack and Dexter, Ratchet and Clank, etc. I'm sure a lot of people know what a lot of that is, but
I know what those are. I know what they are, and I know what the gameplay is like, but I've never played them.
That's all like, is that all, like, that's mostly 2000s, right? Yeah. All 2000s.
Yeah. Cause you'd have college roommates that you'd watch play the games and stuff. And that era I know very well.
Yeah.
But Silent Hill 2 is one of the best games ever made.
I'll just mention this quickly. While I was on break, we put on Jingle All the Way. Just needed to pop on a Christmas movie on Christmas morning. Christmas Day was great this year. It was like I spent the whole day at my house, which is the way my parents, you know, I see my parents around the holidays, obviously, but they went up to Maine. And my sister invited me. She was like, do you want to go up to Maine? I was like, no, I don't want to travel on Christmas Day if I can help it. So we stayed home. Gloria didn't even open all her gifts like in one hit. She like opened some, like 3 of them, like at 2 o'clock. Like, so the whole day was just awesome. And so we wanted to pop on a movie. Nina decided to Jingle All the Way. I'm watching it First of all, the Blu-ray release, which is the rip that I have, has a lot of extra scenes in it that were not on the VHS. Oh. I'm like, what is this director's cut of Jingle All the Way? But they, most notably, like the Big Show as well, I think that might've been.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But the Big Show is like one of the Santas, and it's clear that they had to get him because they needed somebody to tower over Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And he may be the only one that can, but anyway, so I'm watching it and I'm going, this movie's pretty solid. Like, they've got to work with Arnold here, who is not your best for this kind of work. And like, Sinbad was such a, like a relic of the era, but Phil Hartman is hysterical in it. And the movie actually does kind of like, you know, the conceit, it was a Power Rangers like toy, and that would have been right for the time. And it kind of held together. Actually, I was like, this is pretty good. And then there's this
kind of like made in like the Furby era where there was like that must have toy.
Tickle Me Elmo. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was on the mind too, because of 8-Bit Christmas, which has this kind of a similar conceit. And, but then there's this third act where they go to like the Christmas parade in town, and Turbo Man is going to be on the parade, and through a comic mishap, Arnold ends up as the Turbo Man, and then they have like a real, like just a batshit fight throughout the town.
Yeah, he has like a real jetpack for some reason.
Yeah, fly, Turbo Man, use your jetpack. And I'm like, man, this fucking third act really goes off the rails. And I was just thinking, I was like, well, when they pitched it, they must have only pitched the second act. That's all that matters to anybody. That's all that matters to the marketing, is like, Arnold Schwarzenegger's going to try to find a toy that's going to be funny. And it's like, well, how does it end? Like, who gives a fuck? So I look into it because I'm like, this is like not total trash. Like, this looks like it was directed by somebody who meant to direct it. And I find that the director is a gentleman by the name of Brian Levant. And I go, what else has Brian Levant done? Well, he's done a few things, but he did two things that stuck out way in my mind as like, those are two other major 90s children's movies for me. Beethoven and the Flintstones movie with John Goodman.
Right.
Now, I think both of those are good, like quite good, in the same exact way I think Jingle All the Way is quite good. Like, they all have that same level of like, yeah, this works for what it is. And they all have a batshit third act.
Yeah, I don't remember the third act of either Beethoven or Flintstones. I've seen both movies when I was a kid. I've not seen
it. Because it doesn't matter. But you know what? They're basically like, you know, look, much like Jingle All the Way, Beethoven exists for one reason. So that Charles Grodin can get messy. It's like, oh my God, I don't want something, a slobbering dog in my house. It's just that. It's
oh,
like
every, no.
There's a montage where Beethoven's muddy and he's getting shit all over the place. And I'm like, this is the whole movie. This is the thing they pitched, was this montage. And then they have to wrap a whole 90 minutes around it. And so the question is, can you? Like, are you up to the task? But yeah, the third act is like, there's like a mad scientist who wants to kill dogs. Like... And they have to fight him. They end up killing him, basically. Like, the family kills him.
they all pitch in and kill him.
Yeah, they all, they're like, no, Beethoven. And then they kill this guy.
The 90s were a simpler time.
And can I add, there's two burglars in it, like dog burglars, and it's Oliver Platt and Stanley Tucci. Like, you know, they weren't like just some bullshit character actors from the 90s. These are like real dudes, like real actors. And then Flintstones is kind of the same, where Kyle McCullough from Dune and from, Twin Peaks. Yeah. From David Lynch movies. He's the bad guy. He's like the boss at the
I remember him being like the boss, and wasn't Halle Berry like his like hot servant or something?
Yeah, she was sexier in that movie than she's ever been in her whole life. I mean, you know, she's obviously a very attractive woman, but there's something extremely hot about her in the Flintstones. At least I thought so at the time.
It's still,
but maybe I've grown out of the Halle Berry type. But yeah, the third act is like, they got to kill the boss. Like, they got to kill this guy.
Man, it's a different time, the 90s. Like, we were talking about Because I was wondering if I should show Gabriel Duck Hunt. And you were saying that Gloria had some opinions about Duck Hunt as well. And I'm like, I don't know if I really, because I don't think he's even seen a gun before. I don't even think he knows what they are. Yeah. So to be like, I want to introduce this thing to him where you're like murdering animals. Like he would have so many questions. I have to explain like the Second Amendment to him. I don't really want to go down this avenue.
In Duck Hunt, they don't really gloss over it. It's like, you know, the dog grabs them by their scrawny necks to show you that they're dead, and the duck is very dead, and the way they twirl,
there's bullets on the screen, like you're shooting them with bullets.
Man, that was, you know, and Freedom Force, by the way, I was surprised to see blood. Like you're shooting them, yeah. And there's
some sort of red squib marker,
yeah,
when you hit them. So the 90s were a different time, man. You could just, the whole family of people could murder somebody for messing with their dog.
That's why, like, I remember being in the schoolyard and somebody would be like, I'm going to kill you. And the teachers would be like, you never say that. That's the worst thing you can say. And I was like, come on, man. Like in Beethoven, the whole family killed the mad scientist. I'm like, I'm going to kill you is kind of a, like, I get it. It's like it's a comic thing. It's not, we know the difference between killing mad scientists and killing our friends.
Well, I'm going to go to the arcade and play Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've got a bunch of movies and TV that we've been watching. Should we dive into all of them?
Well, let's do the one we've both seen, which is Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
How about that?
I was worried about this movie because I know that everybody involved creatively with it is extremely politically motivated in a very partisan way. And
I heard it was like supposed to be for like climate change. I don't know where I heard that. Somebody said it.
Well, Leo, And so I don't know. It's not a very good recipe for satire when it's like, hi, the purpose of this, of the following comedy is to get you to vote a certain way. Like it's not really the, although I've been thinking about that lately. I'm like, well, could it be, is that acceptable? Or, I mean, of course it's acceptable, but it always feels to me like what you would want to do with any good satire, any good art, is you want the audience, you don't want the audience to be extremely clear on what the political messaging of the movie or the artist are. I think it would be really ideal if both sides of the political spectrum could watch that movie and be like, oh, they totally lampooned my opponent.
Yeah,
you know, which in spots for this movie, that's almost the case. And then in other spots, it's just kind of clearly partisan.
Yeah. So the conceit of the movie is there's an asteroid heading toward Earth and or meteor or something. And comet, actually, I think.
Comet.
Say.
Yep.
And the scientists have calculated that's definitely going to, like, 100% is going to hit it. And they're trying to convince like the media and the president and all this stuff. And there's all these agendas and the media has their own thing that they're trying to do. And so it's kind of like a tragic comedy in a way of
they can't cut
and
through.
The scientists themselves are getting caught up in it too. So it's, there's something with that. It kind of reminds me of like, you know, some of the COVID scientists now, like Fauci. It's like, are you on that TV program because you like it? Like being in the spotlight? Or
yeah, that's an example of how I felt that they were kind of being even politically even handed. With making fun of everybody, kind of, you know, the sort of South Park thing.
Yeah, I can see some of the scenes where it felt like maybe it was along political lines, but I didn't even realize what I think I'm guessing in the end, Meryl Streep was supposed to be a conservative president, but I thought she was, because they had pictures of her like hugging Bill Clinton and stuff like that. So I thought it was like kind of ambiguous at first, at least.
And I suspect that Adam McKay, I suspect that he's like, look, you know, our Democrat leaders haven't done much to solve the planet's woes either or something. Yeah. I'm sure.
And they virtue signal instead of actually doing anything. And so I actually felt I didn't feel that like miffed about any.
No, I agree. Only in spots. But specifically there. What was it? There was like a turn. Oh, yeah. When they look up in the sky and they see it, which I thought was a smart scene, you know, like they finally are like, we can actually see it. Like, just look up And then there was like this movement of like, don't look up, look down and just try to shuffle your feet and deny reality and stuff, which I think is kind of funny. I thought that was like a, you know, like to actually make that the political rally cry of like, we're going to like bury our heads in the sand about reality.
I thought it was pretty funny.
It was funny. But it was, I thought it was disappointing that they were like, oh, the dumb people that reject it are all, construction workers from the South and bumpkins and, you know, they just made it Trump's people. And I was like, couldn't you have kind of made a, I don't know, like, isn't there a better way to do this?
Yeah. But just, I thought the movie was great. Like I did think it was great. Like
it, no, it was funny. It was very funny.
And I thought Leo was really good. Like I thought his performance was, I mean, he's amazing, but his performance, sometimes I forgot it was him. Like it was, he just like plays this like frumpy scientist really well, getting caught up in the hysterics of it all.
Yeah, he put a little weight on. I liked his affair with Kate Blanchett was maybe my favorite part of it. Specifically at the end when Tyler Perry, spoilers, by the way, sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
When Tyler Perry was like, so like, do you want to have sex? Do you want to, what do you do in your last moments? She's like, I just want to get drunk and talk shit about people. I just want to be as toxic as I can possibly be. It's who I am. You know, it's like, the thing that sticks out to me the most is, when Jonah Hill was like, you know, there's us and them, there's you, the poor, there's us, the cool rich. he was very funny in it.
I enjoyed it. Even with the knowledge that it's like it's supposed to be an allegory for something, like, I don't think necessarily it has to be because it's a comet. Because I see a lot of like the COVID stuff in there. I see a lot of any kind of emergency in there where it's just like, I don't know, like everyone tries to either cash grab or, you know, or
it satirized a lot of things that are spot on about where we are as a culture right now. And I think it lands where it needs to land, which that kind of morose ending of like, you know, we really had it all and we flushed it down the toilet. We insisted on our own demise. And there's this sequence where, you know, they're this kind of family forms. It's like Leo's family and it's Jennifer Lawrence and it's this other guy that's been with them the whole movie. And then there's these kind of like wayward, you know, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
Who, again,
he's showing up in everything.
Yeah. And you know, he's good in everything. He always brings something interesting to his roles, like always gives something unexpected. But they're kind of trying, like they've been fighting the whole movie to get their message heard. And they kind of have resigned at this point. They're like, we're just going to live our last moments in happiness, as you know, and family is kind of where happiness is. And there's, so they're like trying to carry on conversation, mundane conversation about the food or about whatever, while they're about to be consumed by flame, basically. Mm-hmm. And there's this moment where one of Leo's kids, who I think might've been like, was supposed to have been like kind of mentally challenged or socially challenged or something. There's something kind of like there's some kind of unfortunate thing there. The kid starts to like take notice of like the table's shaking, the house is about to blow up. And Leo puts his hand on the kid's shoulder to kind of like refocus him. And I thought that was like so heartbreaking and tragic. I was just like, but of course I guess it's a shortcut where, you know, if trying to calm your child, cause you know, they're about to die is, you know, maybe one of the most tragic things you could ever depict in fiction. I was really hit by that moment, you know.
It was effective. Yeah, I noticed that moment too. And it just that whole scene was done really well. And
yeah,
I think it's a good movie. And I don't know. I don't know what the reception of this is beyond our little circle is, but
yeah, I don't either. I liked it for sure.
It seems like, I think Netflix said it's one of the highest like viewed movies they've done so far. So.
Yeah, I think it is the highest viewed. Which is good because it has nothing to do with superheroes, so yeah. That's something.
And it's quality. I generally like Adam McKay's stuff. I like
the Big Short.
Big Short was good. I didn't see whatever his Dick Cheney one was, but
yeah. Normally I would criticize a 2.5-hour comedy where there's like open ended scenes where people are improvising and stuff. Normally that like goes
right. Oh yeah. It's 2.5 hours. It didn't feel like 2.5 hours.
It's long, but it, the performances are the point here. Like the ways that people kind of keep missing each other in conversation, or the refusal to listen to one another, that is kind of like the point of the movie. So I actually think it really works in its favor to have these sequences where, like, especially the first one with Meryl Streep, where she's, you know, if anybody's ever been in a meeting with somebody that you needed to get their attention, you needed somebody that has power over you, that you're like, okay, I need to like make sure my message is loud and clear. And you can kind of tell that your meeting with them is their block in their day that they're relaxing. They're kind of like taking the day off while you're talking. And because they keep like redirecting the conversation to like fun stuff or stuff, you know, like talking about smoking or, you know. Yeah, I thought that played out brilliantly. And so it helps too. Like if you're going to do these comedic improvisations, it's cool to do it with normally drama actors. Like,
yeah, big drama. I mean, she's great in The Devil Wears Prada. She's a great comedic actress.
Yeah, she's really funny, actually.
Yeah.
And all that stuff with like the, you know, like the B-roll of like seals and like.
Oh, yeah. It was cute. It like added a little artfulness to it and playfulness.
That's kind of what I'm looking for. And I got a lot of that. Now, here's the most important thing you need to know about the movie. They shot it, or some of it, in Fall River, Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, including do you remember the scene that takes place in the battleship?
Yeah.
That's the battleship Mamie in Fall River. That's right next to Nina's mom's apartment.
Wow.
And I mean, yeah, it's just literally right there. And it is cool. We have this battleship. It's called Battleship Cove is the area. And you can, for $2 or something, you can go all the way down inside the battleship and
see Meryl Streep.
You can see Meryl Streep.
Just hanging out.
Or Jonah Hill improvising. but.
Yeah, like the son, her son is like the, whatever that position is.
Yeah, and he ends up just getting abandoned by her in the end. That moment where they realize that, like, well, we fucked up and, like, we're not going to be able to blow this thing up after all. And everybody just kind of, like, slowly abandons their posts. I feel like I've been in that situation before. The kind of, like, okay, we need to, like, abort. And we can't really talk about it that loudly. But anyway, so they must have done some shooting outside of the battleship scene because there's like this one scene with like a crowd of people. I think they're supposed to be MAGA type people, and they're yelling it. Like whoever that general was, that character. And so it's like a crowd of extras yelling at him about the comet. And they're the featured extra, the one that you can see front and center, is this older dude. And he's doing a real bad job. I'm like, ah, he's just like clearly not a great extra. He's the cop from Sexually Frank.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
And I'll tell you, I'm just on the elliptical. I'm watching the movie and I'm like, it's the cop from Sexually Frank. Holy fuck. And that's not the first time that's happened. I should, you know, it would be a lot of work, but I could do a compilation of like movies you've seen that contain Red Cow actors.
The Red Cow multiverse.
Like, another good one is, you know, Mark's sister-in-law and Having Fun Up There, the one who was making the birdhouse and stuff. She is the other flight attendant besides Jennifer Lawrence at the beginning of Joy.
Oh.
It'd be funny to just be like, here's a bunch of like A-list movies with like my people as extras.
My people.
And a lot of times, they're the extras that appear in those movies, they're horrible actors. This guy was one of the worst I've ever worked with, I have to say. Like we couldn't take a long take to save our lives. Like we would just get the words and then we'd move. I'd be like, all right, I'll just like, I'll intercut it with some, I'll cut to a fucking shot of a papaya or something while you talk. He couldn't, it's almost like he didn't have a grasp of like language itself. Like, like the opposite of being able to act, this guy. And then I remember he would like email me totally crazy stuff, like out of nowhere, like well after the movie was done. Like tried to keep up with dialogue.
What did he like email you? Like space is fake and like the Illuminati is in charge.
Yeah, flat. Space is fake. Time is nothing. Yeah, no, he's crazy. But I'm glad to see he's still alive and that he appeared in Don't Look Up. And I believe he was a crazy MAGA person too. So it's good to see him play himself.
Oh, like in real life?
Yeah, like in real life.
All right. Far out.
So those Don't Look Up, I recommend it for sure. And I think we found that it didn't get great critical reception, which is surprising.
Yeah, at least at first. I don't know if like, I don't know. Sometimes I'm not really sure what the critics are going for. I like they didn't to segue into Boba Fett. Maybe is they didn't like Boba Fett.
I do wonder. I do wonder what it's like to be a Hollywood director that hates materialism and hates like the media. It feels like you must just hate every moment of your life. They hates the rich. They hates the mega rich. But you're like, all right, Leo DiCaprio and Meryl Streep, why don't you be in the movie and we can together hate the rich? It's the Oscars problem. It's very odd.
Yeah, it is the strange thing.
And Jonah Hill, he's gained and lost so much weight over the years. He's almost like transcendent. Like he's almost like it. He's no weight at all.
Yeah, he was in between this time, and he looked really good.
Very good. We were talking a little bit about it in Discord. Jonah Hill, I feel, has played to his strengths and done a really kind of Matthew McConaughey-esque transition in his career to a really solid place that makes good use of his talents while not typecasting him really anymore. And
yeah,
it's more than I can say for other. I'm sure some people like some of like Adam Sandler's dramatic work and stuff, but I always find it a bit awkward and a bit like, it feels like he's taking a vacation from comedy and he'll be back to it very soon. Whereas Jonah Hill feels like he's very comfortable in these roles and that he really brings a lot to these roles. Like,
yeah,
certainly Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street. What's the one with
Moneyball?
Moneyball. Yeah, that was good too.
Yeah. Yeah. So Boba Fett. So nobody liked the first episode but us. Yeah.
Yes.
And then everybody likes the second episode and that kind of redeems the first one. Do I have it right?
Yeah, and the inside scoop is that nobody's watching it. Disney's disappointed with the numbers. Yeah, especially the second episode. I guess there was a huge drop off.
Now, how smart would it have been for them to release both episodes?
I think they should have definitely. I think because I like the first one. I think it does a lot. It's very visual. There's little dialogue, especially in the beginning. You know, he's getting out of the Sarlacc pit and all that. some of the stuff like, you know, in Rogue One, where you see Star Wars in like different shots, you know, like there's things that they do that you don't normally see in Star Wars. In Rogue One, they did the man eye view of the AT-ATs and it like was like shot like a war film almost. And there's similar stuff here where there's camera angles and artful things, which it's got to be like Robert Rodriguez doing his thing, and it really works for me. Where unless the music choices too feel very fresh for Star Wars.
It's so funny because I'm like, so often what I'm enjoying, I'm like, ooh, it's not like Star Wars. Therefore I'm enjoying it. I'm like, well, then why does it have to be Star Wars? Why don't I just watch something else? Like it's like Joker's like that too, where you're like, ooh, I kind of like that. It's not like a superhero movie, but I'm watching because it's a superhero movie.
I think what it says is there's a lot of avenues that Star Wars could go.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do the George Lucas shot, reverse shot.
Well, I guess the generous thing would be that if George Lucas based the Star Wars universe, the Star Wars fiction in these kind of like genre homages, then what the shows are able to do is homage, you know, samurai, tribal stuff, Western heist. You know, they can weave in and out, you know, mob movies.
Yeah.
They can kind of weave in and out too. Yeah. So it's cool. Yeah. I actually thought the first episode was cool as hell. And then I rewatched one and two back to back with Nina. And when I was watching it kind of through her eyes, I was like, oh yeah, I guess it is kind of like underwhelming or like it feels like we don't know what the show is yet enough.
Yeah.
In the first one. So I was like, please just watch the second one. Cause then I feel like you'll get it. And then she did. But so then something else must've worked on me. And I think it is what you're saying. I think it was the kind of fresh aesthetic. It was certainly that music that dude who does, his name is Ludwig. He did the music for Mandalorian as well. I think his music's amazing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But both these knocking out of the park then.
Yeah. And you know what I love about it too is, and of course it, the second episode's a very Dances with Wolves, but I like Dances with Wolves. So it's okay.
That's a good version of that.
Yeah. It's a very good version of that. I love Mandalorian. I do, but you've always heard me complain about like, I don't like every episode is like, yes, I'll give you the info, but first you must complete a quest.
Answer
for me.
Yeah. Get these things from this. And then I will give you the quest item.
That and so you far, will use the show to... ain't that the show. The no. show is kind of more like a Better Call Saul-ish type vibe where
it's taking its time and you still don't really know completely what Boba Fett's motivation is in the present,
right?
Like why he's like trying to become a crime lord. Like, because like you get the flashbacks and he's almost just surviving in the flashbacks, and he's almost recreating himself after the Sarlacc pit. So you don't really know what he's about in the present. I assume we'll find out what his motivation is, and he'll reveal that to us. And that might be frustrating to some people where it's like why is he doing this? Why does he care about Tatooine being a crime lord? Why would Boba Fett do that?
I'm really in the bag for like, I love stories about somebody remaking themselves or having a near-death experience and it completely changing who they are, or, you know, like, and this is a character where we've never really known who he was anyway. Not really.
Yeah. I've seen a couple like crabby Gen Xers being like, oh, he's supposed to be this and supposed to, it's like, we didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
It's like, so I don't think I have, like, he has a cool art design to him and that's probably why you liked him. And it's like, they're ruining the mystique. And it's like, the mystique's not that interesting.
Yeah. Not anymore. Anyway, it's like, you've gotten 40 years of a mystique. Like maybe it's time that we do something with it.
And look, he was already a little kid with Jango Fett. There's some mystique gone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I mean, yeah, if you asked me, you're like, hey, do you think this is what Boba Fett was? I'd be like, no, I had no idea. But please keep showing me cool things. I mean, this whole thing with the Tuskens just captivated me for some reason.
Yeah. It's doing things very simply. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel here. It's simply, it's Dances with Wolves. It's, you know,
giving him the kind of like tribal robes instead of the white spacesuit. It felt in The Mandalorian like they did that because putting him in the white spacesuit would only reveal that he's not a slender English man from the 80s. but now to actually go ahead and explain that. And I heard that like he was the guy, because he's Maori, you know, the New Zealander, that he was the one being like, hey, maybe Boba Fett can do a Haka and maybe like we can incorporate some of my heritage and stuff. And they were like, okay, but like, it wasn't something that they had originally thought to do. And now it's like, obviously a major part of the show is like this cultural stuff that he's bringing to it. And I actually like that actor, you know, if had Lucas not cast that guy as Boba Fett, I don't think that he would be at the top of the list of people to cast in like a major TV series for Disney Plus. I don't think he brings that kind of juice. But there's something kind of cool about the fact that he's not the best actor in the world. He's something kind of just like masculine and neutral about him.
Yeah. Well, he does bring a sort of intensity to him too. Yeah. Like a lot of the, like, I love the scene where he just goes into like Tashi Station or wherever. He just beats up a bunch of guys. He just like pounds a drink and then leaves. He doesn't even explain why he did any of that.
Right.
It's like, there's something very masculine. He gives a very powerful, like strong, that performance. It's not good, it's not great, it's just, it's him, and it's actually, I think it works in this situation.
Yeah. I guess I love a story about somebody being, you know, stripped down naked and then rebuilt. There's something cool. And you know, in Return of the Jedi they killed this character, and so to be like, somehow Boba Fett has returned would be really shitty. And but they didn't. Instead, they spent an hour and a half being like, Boba Fett's changed. You know, Boba Fett's a different guy, maybe a different guy than you expect.
Yeah, he was brought to his lowest point, literally, into a Sarlacc pit. And he was like, man, there's some very visceral. It was Boba Fett's bad day in that first episode, definitely. And then he, when he remakes himself, and the train heist is awesome. I love like there's some like comedic details that kind of remind me of kind of the prequels, but done better. Like the train droid in the front, he's just like just doing all this random shit with the
yeah, it's true.
With the train parts, and it like it looks ridiculous and comedic. And then he like scurries out after like on these little tiny spider legs.
It's like a special edition or something. Yeah, totally.
There's something comedic and playful that George Lucas would just insert and we would all complain about, but this was done a little more tastefully. But
and then the twin huts, which as far as I can tell, I think they might be conjoined, which is even more disgusting and awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. They're definitely intertwined. Yeah. And, like, yeah, I love the joke. It's like, you don't have a litter. You haven't gone in with a litter. And then these guys come in with a litter, and yeah, it's like sagging at the middle.
It's great. And he's wiping the sweat from his brow with a fucking mouse. And they got the girl one with her little fan, and like she just wants to kill everybody.
She's like whispering over
the brother's like, she always wants to kill everybody. I think it's amazing. I love it. I love it even more than the Mandalorian. I like Mandalorian an awful lot. I think it's very cool, but this is like so my speed, and it's disappointing that people are giving up on it. I hope that word of mouth for the second episode, it does seem like the second episode turned a lot of people around.
Yeah, I think so. And there's that black Wookiee, had a great design to him. I hear he's from like comic books or something. Yeah, I don't know.
He works with Boba Fett at some point or something.
Yeah, but he's got a great design. I never knew that until somebody told me after, but I was like, oh, that's an interesting. Yeah. Like I like bringing in elements of the universe and making it feel very lived in. And I was joking to you earlier. I was like, man, they really can't get the CG on these huts right, even after like 25 years. It still looks like special edition.
Yeah. And yet, because it's consistent with special edition at this point, I'm nostalgic for special edition. I'm like, oh, they look perfect. That's exactly how they should look.
That's how Jabba looks, right?
Yeah. I'm actually even more nostalgic for the first release of the special edition, because of course the special edition got specialized.
Oh yeah, it got the DVD release. They upgraded the model, but I think I liked the older model better.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little bit smoother. They like over textured him in the second one.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I love it, and now I'm like looking forward to every Wednesday. I like it better than Hawkeye. I like Hawkeye a lot, but I it's like one of my favorite things. I'm like super into it. That music too is that that credits music. Hey, bum 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 bum.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, and Matt Berry plays the droid.
Oh yeah.
Richard Iotti played a droid in Mandalorian, so they're gonna get the whole IT crowd eventually, I guess.
But, oh yeah.
Yeah, having Matt Berry be like, he will not talk. He will not be best buddies with you. Is amazing.
And I love how they made him like kind of old trilogy janky too. Like he's like, I don't know, Marriott on strings.
Yeah, so good. And it makes this Tusken stuff makes you like, it makes the Anakin thing a lot worse, you know?
Well, they kind of justify in the thing. It's like, oh, all the other sand people tribes are more brutal than us or whatever. But
you can even understand why any particular sand person tribe would hold captives. I mean, they're in like dire straits. They're, you know, kind of this impoverished, rambling group of people, and so of course Anakin was justified in his rage. But now that you know this, like the Tusken women and you know the Tusken children, so when he evokes that later in the scene, it's like, oh Jesus, you really did kill fucking people that were having a bad go of it. So I think it enriches the drama of the prequels somehow. But the only thing it makes now that it makes even less sense that Natalie Portman's like, it's okay. Doesn't mean, you know, we all have bad days. You know, sometimes you murder an entire village.
Well, she's racist, so yeah, doesn't like those sand people.
You think I give a fuck about sand people? Yeah, I'm with you. It's like, how can he be? I'm not sure. Like, I mean, I'm sure you could desecrate Boba Fett even further, but it's, yeah, once you've made him a kid and it's like, oh, and he's a clone too. And then you revoiced him over for the,
there's a ton of, everyone's a Kiwi in these, in these shows and movies.
And just, like,
who cares?
They remember Josh Trank was supposed to do a Boba Fett movie. And then like,
I'm so glad it didn't happen.
Yeah, James Mangold was supposed to do it too. And of course, I'm sure James Mangold make a very cool Boba Fett movie. But yeah, I really like the series thing, because we're an hour and a half in and basically nothing's happened. And you could never go to the – imagine being in the movie theater and you're an hour and a half in and this is all you've gotten. You'd be like, what the fuck? But it's just preferable for me.
I got a robe now.
Cover
my fat.
Yeah, you know, the guy, I thought for, like, because there was a few really unfortunate shots in Mandalorian where he was like,
it seems like he did some working out between this and that.
But, you know, like, when you get to be your mid-50s, even when you're, like, an in-shape guy, you've got kind of that heft to you. And
yeah, him and Fennec are, like, in pushing 60, right? Like, actors and actresses are, like, 50 and 60.
Well, then she is doing very well for herself.
They look awesome for what they are, but yeah.
Do you remember she was Chun-Li in the Street Fighter movie?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
On the topic of hot.
Good. She looks good.
And then you saw The Matrix.
I actually have the Street Fighter movie. I have the Street Fighter movie.
Apropos.
There you go, Vega. Yeah. It's the kind of Mortal Kombat version of Street Fighter they made for the movie, which is awful. But it's also great. There's Jean-Claude Van Damme, Guile.
Just like the meta-ness of it. You know, the movie based on a game, and then they made a game based on it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it so much.
And it's digitized characters, like you said.
It's digitized characters. Oh, so good.
So tell me about The Matrix Resurrections, which I did not watch.
Oh, I almost don't want to talk about it. I didn't like it at all. Okay. I'm going to start by saying some nice things about it. So I saw The Matrix. It was on HBO Max, Matrix 4. It's been a while since I've seen the trilogy. I don't think I've seen the second two since they were in theaters.
I never saw them. That's part of why I didn't watch the fourth one, because I was like, I've lost the thread. I only have the first very cool movie in my head, and that's it.
Yeah, the first, and I'm not that huge a fan of the original Matrix, disclosure. Like, it's a good movie. I liked it at the time. Yeah. I thought it was just like a cool action movie.
Sold a lot of DVDs.
Sold a lot of DVDs. I think I've seen the Animatrix, but I don't remember anything about that either. So I will say this about The Matrix 4 is that it's a sequel to The Matrix 3. And there's something into that, because like when I think of like Ghostbusters Afterlife, like I feel like it has a little more integrity than Ghostbusters Afterlife. Like, where that feels like a soft reboot, but it's also a sequel. And then the third act is just trash. So I think in comparison to that, I actually do think there's some merit to it, because it is a sequel to The Matrix 3 Revolutions. Underline that, because I think it's got that lore continuing in this. So spoilers for Matrix 4, somehow Neo has returned and
he busted out of the Sarlacc pit.
They, you know, they spend the first, like, I almost turned it off after the first half an hour, because it's very tongue in cheek referencing the fact that because Neo is back, he's in the Matrix. They kind of like rebooted him. And he's like a game designer, and he's been tasked to make a sequel to his game series called The Matrix. He had a Matrix trilogy, and they're like, and of course, Warner Brothers approaches him and is like, you have to make a sequel and stuff like that. So it's very like cringy, self-referential.
But it's also kind of winking at the audience going, we'd rather not make a sequel to this, but they're making us. And so we have to, we're basically Neo.
Yeah.
Or Lana Wachowski is Neo.
But like, well, in like the studio has said, we're going to make this without you. So you might as well make it. So it's essentially what, Lana Wachowski was dilemma was like, they're going to make this. So I might as well make my version. I'm actually fine with that. And they actually do pay it off later where like, The Matrix put Neo through that because they wanted to like diminish what his accomplishments were in the, his original trilogy. So it pissed me off at the beginning, but they kind of pay it off. So it's lessened, but I still was annoyed by it. And then the second act, they get Neo out of this new Matrix. And then there's a ton of lore stuff, which I didn't really care about. Like they have like a new city that they've made with the robots that they, so they have to explain all this stuff. Like, well, here's the new city with the robots and the humans together. And we have to explain why Neo is back. We have to explain why there's a new Matrix. We have to explain. So, and look, I understand. I've seen the original Matrix trilogy. They do a lot of like dialogue and exposition where it was tiresome then and it's tiresome now, so they did it's not like I'm unfamiliar with the series, but the second act they do a lot of the lore stuff, and then the third act is breaking out Trinity, who they also brought back, spoilers, and then it becomes kind of like a love story. So then It's very strange because the stakes are like they go up and down, and then it becomes like, oh, actually it's the Matrix was a love story this whole time, and we have to rescue Trinity, and I don't know, it just doesn't feel like there's that much importance to it either, like so the stakes aren't built properly. So I don't know, and then there's Agent Smith is back too, but he's played by a different guy. He's played by Jonathan Groff. Groff, is that his name?
Yeah.
Christoph. He's in King of England. Mindhunter series. Yeah. He's really good, actually.
Yeah, he is.
But I didn't really see a reason for him to come back as Agent or come and be Agent Smith. Like, it just seemed kind of random. And I know, like, they do a lot of that with, it's kind of like, what is that, Cloud Atlas? There's, like, a lot of people playing the same parts, but they're different actors and
through the ages.
I think that's a Wachowski thing. So, whatever. But it didn't really work for me. And I didn't think there was a reason for Agent Smith to come back. And then they also bring back a Morpheus character that is an amalgam. Like, so, in the Matrix, Neo like programs a Morpheus character who's also an amalgamation of Agent Smith, but then the people in the real world bring that program into the real world, and they, because like, you know how there was programs that only lived in the Matrix,
yeah,
but now they can bring programs into the real world, like, and they like are these like cloud figures that can interact with humans. It's very strange, but it's kind of interesting. Like I said, the admirable thing is that they're trying to make a sequel, and there's some good ideas there. And there's also some interesting ideas that like Neo and Trinity are kind of like yin and yang to each other, like feminine and masculine versions of the one, which I think is actually kind of interesting.
Because the Wachowskis need to start doing like story by, and then somebody else takes a pass at the screenplay.
I think so, because I do think there was a lot of interesting ideas, but there's a lot of things that didn't quite work. One, the action is not good. Mm. Like, they didn't get a good choreographer. It's very boring action. I think, the script needed like one more pass by somebody. Lana Wachowski said this is a very personal film to her, so it's like, I don't know if I wanted to take that away from her, but at the same time, something wasn't working for me. So,
yeah.
As a piece of entertainment, it wasn't working.
It sounds pretty disjointed and tiresome.
Yeah, it's disjoint. Yes, yes. It, ultimately, that's what it was for me. But yeah, so there was the Morpheus character that they brought in, which was supposed to be an amalgamation of Morpheus and Agent Smith to begin with. So I don't know why you need another Agent Smith character. So that, yeah, there was a lot of that. And then, but there was some interesting ideas, because like in the new Matrix, they have a bunch of like bots in there. Like it kind of reminds me of, you know, how if you're on the internet, like half the people you interact with, they're probably robots. And so like when the action scenes at the end, they kind of can just flood the zone with all these random bots, like because like you realize that half the people you interacted with were like fake people, and they like use them as bombs, like jumping out of buildings and stuff too. So it's like they're going through the streets and they're just like jumping out of windows. There's a lot of interesting ideas there that could have been executed better. And then you have Keanu Reeves, who he's just been in this series of movies where he's an expert gun person. He's an expert, you know, gun user. And in the original movies, you know, the bullet time and things like that. But he just like does this one like push move, like with where he does like a force push, which I don't think Neo did in the original movies, but he does it like every single time. So it's like he's like a really lame action character, but he's also getting up there. He's probably almost what, in his 60s, right? Or 50s. He's 50s, yeah. 60s.
I would peg him for like 52.
So the action was lame, the story didn't quite work for me, and ultimately I was confused about the stakes. And it became a love story, which is fine, but I feel like they could have built that better. And there was a lot of good ideas. Yeah, disjointed in the end. I don't personally recommend it. A lot of people in our Slack liked it and they were giving me a hard time, but
it's hard for me to imagine liking it, but so, maybe I'll watch it someday. I feel like I wouldn't want to watch it unless I saw the second two, and I don't think I'm willing to watch the second two.
So that's what I'll say, is that if you have seen The Matrix, you've seen the Animatrix, you've seen Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolutions, and you had a good time, check out Matrix 4.
Yeah.
I think you'll probably have a good time. And
fans
I thought
of the genre.
And yeah, fans of the genre, 7.5. but you know, in the end, I did have a lot of interesting thoughts, and it made me feel some things. So, you know, it can't be all bad, but it wasn't the movie for me.
Yeah. Well, there it is. The only other thing I meant to discuss briefly was we got new trailers for the Batman and for Peacemaker. Peacemaker will be out by the time, you know, we'll probably start seeing episodes of that by the time we talk next.
Oh, right, right.
Looks very funny.
I didn't see the trailer for that.
And the Batman trailer, which like this has got to be the third or fourth of them now, you know, because it's been so delayed. But man, it looks cool as fuck, and the screenplay looks like it's really good. Like there was quite a bit of dialogue in the last trailer, and all of it struck me as like well written or like interesting. Or you can just tell that they've got the right psychology for this thing. Like
it felt very strong, very assertive, and very, I felt that when I saw the trailers for Joker, you know, it's like there's somebody has a vision for this and they're just executing it perfectly.
And it's really impressive that after all these iterations of Batman, that there's somebody can still come along and be extremely, inspired.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this. I love Paul Dano, and him being a creepy motherfucker seems pretty fun.
It's really cool. They're like hiding however he looks up until now.
I'm sure it's going to be shocking or fun or interesting.
Grotesque.
I mean, he's great. Have you seen Prisoners?
No.
See Prisoners.
I do think he's great, though. I agree.
I just like, but that's a good one. That's Denis. I messed it up in our last one. Denis Villeneuve. And he did Prisoners, and Paul Dano's in it. It's great in that.
People I went to school with that I knew personally did Swiss Army Man. with starred him and Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh yeah.
And Little Miss Sunshine. He's great in Little Miss Sunshine. He doesn't talk for most of the movie.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Little Miss Sunshine is one of the best screenplays. If somebody was like, hey, like, I want to get into screenwriting, can you recommend like a screenplay for me to read? I'd be like, read that one. It's so tight. And so the characters are so well drawn, and the story is extremely well structured. And yeah,
it's one of my favorite movies. Little Miss Sunshine.
Agreed.
I quote the grandpa all the time, like the, there he goes, like, it's like always with the fucking chicken. Cause it's like, it's when anything gets repetitive, I'm like, always with the fucking chicken.
And then the guy who wrote it went on to write Toy Story 3, which is another very good screenplay. And then he was hired to do The Force Awakens, or to do the first Star Wars movie. And then they canned him. They shit canned him.
Oh, well, they shouldn't have.
They got a Lawrence Kasdan back in.
No.
Dummies.
What I will say about writing and improving on something is The Witcher. I saw Witcher season 2, which is on Netflix. And that was improved in every way from the first season. I said the first season looked like a CW show. Henry Cavill is just, he's such a good performer. Like, yeah. And you can tell he has passion for the role. So even though the first season was complete trash, I just wanted to watch more of him be passionate about this role.
Sometimes that's all that it takes.
Yeah. But they improved in the second season in every way. They improved, like, the cinematography is way improved. The effects, it has a much more focused storyline. Like in the first one, they kind of just did like this happens and this happens, and there's almost like some monster of the week kind of things, and this one was like a little more focused. You could tell it was driving towards something. The writing was like I would say 20% better, but with the real bump in the cinematography, it went a long way. It's not the best. It's still, I think, a very flawed show, but like I said, Henry Cavill being so into it, and I'm kind of jonesing for some fantasy when I'm washing my dishes, and it's good. It's like good to have in the background.
That's good. It's become like a kind of a minor. It does seem to me like you're formally a fan of this show.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it, even though I think objectively the first season's like bad, and I think some people in the Discord were trying to watch it, and they're like, I almost like quit the show, but then I got into it, and I think because it's Henry Cavill brings a lot of passion to it.
Is it time to do we haven't gotten to see any EJ reviews Game of Thrones in a long time? You could do a season of The Witcher, and EJ he won't do it.
Just let me have this. It's just once I don't know. I might do the new season of Game of Thrones because I feel like, I don't know, for some reason I feel like I can talk a lot about Game of Thrones, but
they're moving.
And there's an inherent stuffiness to Game of Thrones that I think I can make fun of. So
yeah, right. It's like, yeah, it's like very ripe for the picking. Mm-hmm. All righty.
Red Cow Arcade.